Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, September 24th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti says the International Monetary Fund is being diplomatic in saying Harare does not qualify for debt cancellation under the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative.
Instead of simply saying you guys are hopeless, they're just being very polite to say you don't qualify. So this is just a euphemism to say we don't trust you. But the bottom line is that Zimbabwe qualifies because we are highly indebted and poor.
President Robert Mugabe's daughter, Bona, has reportedly grabbed a farm from a white commercial farmer in Goromonzi district near Harare.
There is no one that is going to look at Zimbabwe as an investment choice when property rights are totally ignored.
And the United Nations General Assembly's annual high-level debate officially kicked off this morning with UN Secretary-General Ban Ki-moon urging world leaders to address problems afflicting the world today.
A former finance minister Tendai Biti says the International Monetary Fund is being diplomatic in saying Harare does not qualify for debt cancellation under the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries or HIPC initiative. Biti, who is a member of the opposition MDC renewal team, accused President Robert Mugabe's government of failing to meet the IMF requirements to qualify under HIPC by embarking on controversial economic policies. This, Biti says, has forced the IMF to shut out Harare. IMF senior official in Harare, Domenico Faniza, told a business breakfast in Harare Tuesday, Zimbabwe does not qualify for debt relief under the HIPC initiative because it is not poor enough. But the new country representative said that today the International Monetary Fund is looking at a new flexible debt repayment schedule for the Southern African nation.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, in response to Fanisa's remarks, said Harare, saddled with a $10 billion debt, could take another route through working on debt rescheduling so that it gets access to new funding. As all economic indicators are heading south in Harare, Chinamasa is sought to have Zimbabwe's debt cancelled or get more funding from the IMF. The organization has been reluctant to release fresh funds before Harare pays its debt. Biti tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, Zimbabwe reneged on its agreement to qualify for HIPC.
It's not a question of Zimbabwe not qualifying. Remember, YPIC is a window that closed in 2004, but even without... Despite that, I actually signed an agreement with them as finance minister on the 7th of June 2013. The bottom line is that the ZANU-PF government has failed to meet the conditions that I agreed with the IMF. So the IMF, instead of simply saying you guys are failure, you are hopeless, they're just being very polite to say you don't qualify. So this is just a euphemism to say you are useless, we don't trust you. But the bottom line is that Zimbabwe qualifies because we are highly indebted and poor. So there are certain indices that are used whether you qualify.
What are these indices?
For instance, the ratio of your budget to your debt, the ratio of your debt to your GDP, the ratio, it's called the net present value, of your exports to your revenue. So they use these indices. So by any of those indices, we're extremely poor and we qualify. Remember, you have to retrospectively apply them to 2004. That's why we were in fact able to sign as Zimbabwean government in 2013, because we qualified.
That was former Finance Minister Tendai Biti of the opposition MDC renewal team speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. The HIPC initiative was launched in 1996 by the IMF and World Bank with the aim of ensuring that no poor country faces a debt burden it cannot manage. Since then, the international financial community, including multilateral organizations and governments, have worked together to reduce sustainable levels the external debt burdens to the most heavily indebted poor countries. A number of developing nations have benefited from this initiative. These include Zambia, Malawi, Mozambique, Ghana, Afghanistan, Haiti, Republic of Congo, Tanzania, and Senegal, among others.
President Robert Mugabe's daughter, Bona, has reportedly grabbed a farm from a white commercial farmer in Goromonze district near Harare. As Thomas Chiripasi reports, the farmer has been ordered to move from the property.
When Studio 7 arrived at Devonia Farm near Juru Growth Point, popularly known as Kwabora in Goromonze district, several army and police officers, including members of the Secret Service, had sealed off the farm. The evicted farmer, only identified as Hunter, was also seen loading his farming equipment with the help of his former laborers into lorries that were waiting. Some of the tractors were driven to unidentified locations in Harare. The security details also barred Studio 7 from talking to anyone at Devonia Farm, where the farmer was growing seed maize and wheat. One of Hunter's neighbors in the farming community, who refused to be identified, told Studio 7 that the evicted farmer was phoned by a senior member of the military last week, advising him that Bona Mugabe would be moving into his property.
We had a message from Tana Temba Nkitazo to say that Bona, which is Mugabe's newly married daughter, wants a farm, and it's going to be one of three farms in Enterprise. And then on Thursday last week, another five drove, and Friday we got a call to say, you must get off the farm.
Hunter's former workers were also complaining that they now do not know what their future holds following the eviction of their employer and Bona Mugabe's takeover of the farm. The grabbing of Devonia Farm by Bona today comes at a time when a new wave of invasions is being reported in the countryside, especially in the Matabeleland region. Her takeover of the property means that the Mugabe family now has several farms after the president and his wife Grace allegedly displaced several people in Mazowe district when they took over some properties. On the contrary, President Mugabe recently called for a moratorium on farm invasions. The opposition movement for democratic change is on record saying most of the farms that were acquired under the land reform program were parceled out to mainly ZANU-PF members, especially the top brass. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Bona, while Lands and Rural Resettlement Minister Douglas Mombeshora said he was not aware of what was going on at Devonia Farm. Meanwhile, Commercial Farmers Union President Charles Tufts criticized the new wave of farm invasions and land grabs, saying they violated people's rights to property as enshrined in the Constitution.
The problem that we have now is that the country is quite literally on its knees economically, and we are desperate to attract foreign investment. And there is no one that is going to look at Zimbabwe as an investment choice when property rights are totally ignored.
Tufts called for a change of government policy on land, saying the land grabs and invasions were having a ripple effect on the country's economic growth potential.
Well, it's all about policy, isn't it? And we need to, as a country, have a narrative and policy change so that we can re-engage with the greater community. Because if we don't, we're going to continue to spiral down into abject poverty.
Some economists blame the country's poor economic performance on the land reforms that were embarked on by the ZANU-PF government in 2000. The agrarian reforms displaced thousands of white commercial farmers and their workers, while most of the new settlers did not have the expertise and resources to produce effectively. Reporting for Studio 7 from Goromonze District, Mashonaland East Province, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The United Nations General Assembly's annual high-level debate officially kicked off this morning with UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urging world leaders to address problems afflicting the world today. More than 120 leaders spent the whole day yesterday discussing the existential threat of climate change and getting a head start on agenda for this year that is dominated by an unprecedented number of challenges facing the world. VOA Sandra Nyaira has more details.
Mr. Ban opened the general debate, which over the next 6 days will spotlight 196 leaders on major issues of international concern. The theme of the debate this year is delivering on and implementing a transformative post-2015 development agenda, as well as discuss urgent crises ranging from ongoing conflicts in Syria, Iraq, Ukraine, and South Sudan. Mr. Ban urged world leaders to do more to help stop the spread of the deadly Ebola virus in West Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama told the assembly that the world today was in a mess. The crisis around the world, in particular, the threat posed by extremists like ISIS, Russia in Ukraine, Syria and Iraq, are threatening to reverse gains made at the end of the Cold War.
It is time for the world, especially Muslim communities, to explicitly, forcefully, and consistently reject the ideology of organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. It is one of the tasks of all great religions to accommodate devout faith with a modern, multicultural world. No children are born hating, and no children anywhere should be educated to hate other people. There should be no more tolerance of so-called clerics who call upon people to harm innocents because they're Jewish, or because they're Christian, or because they're Muslim.
He also urged the world leaders to come together to help strengthen West Africa's health institutions so they can contain the Ebola virus that is spreading like wildfire. Meanwhile, the climate change summit ended last night with Mr. Ban thanking world leaders for making bold pronouncements in their efforts to deal with climate change. Countries pledged over $2.3 billion towards the Green Climate Fund. The world prepares for a firm agreement on climate change in Paris, France, in 2015. Team of Elders member Graca Machel, the wife of the late South African President Nelson Mandela, urged world leaders to search their souls and see if their pledges to the Green Climate Fund matched the way they polluted and continue to destroy the ozone layer through their quest for development.
I want to make an appeal. I think each one of us, as head of state or prime minister or minister, as captain of industry, and whoever has made pledges here, maybe we should go back to the drawing board and ask hard question: how far we have gone in terms of precipice, and how much would be needed if we seriously want them to reverse?
Environment Minister Xavier Kwasukubere, who spoke on behalf of President Robert Mugabe at the General Assembly yesterday, expressed concern over the West's reluctance to fully commit to helping African nations mitigate the effects of climate change. Kasukwere said Zimbabwe and the rest of the Southern African community were suffering from hunger caused mainly by the lack of rains as a result of climate change. In the West, he said, should provide more resources and cheap technology to help Africa in terms of climate change.
Your Excellencies, Zimbabwe views climate change as a very serious issue, and we have been meeting our obligations under the convention. Zimbabwe was among the first few countries to sign and ratify the convention, also to submit the initial national communication to this.
Kasukwere said Zimbabwe is currently drafting a renewable energy policy, adding Harare is trying to curb greenhouse emissions, with private companies now contributing towards power production in the country. He said two new projects to this effect are currently being discussed, with Zimbabwe keen to join the region's Green Corridor program that is currently being discussed. Reporting for VOA Studio 7 in New York at the United Nations, this is Sandra Nyaira.
In a related development, Tourism Minister Walter Mzembe is expected today to address university students at Ohio University on how his ministry has been able to turn around the country's tourism sector after a decade of decay. The university students have been to Zimbabwe for their African studies. Muzembe says he is elated that American universities are expressing an interest in Zimbabwe. He says America is Zimbabwe's biggest tourism market, and an opportunity to address students and possible tourists is great for the country. He spoke with Sandra Nyaira in New York.
My intention really is to leverage with the student population in the United States who on an annual basis can do up to two or three trips, especially the African Affairs Departments, to Africa. And it is not just Ohio. We think that Ohio will be a good testimonial for us going forward if we do our work properly there. They have already sent 30 students who were here about 3 months ago. We have now formed part of the core team that is reciprocating the good gesture we extended to them by inviting minister to deliver this public lecture, but also to hear from me how we have built Brand Zimbabwe in the last 6 years with all the contradictions that came with the inclusive government and the sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe, because that's negative branding, but we have managed to rise above all that adversity to position a very attractive global destination that was only just recently recognized by the European Council for Tourism and Trade as the world's best destination.
That was Tourism Minister Walter Muzembe speaking with Studio 7 in New York. Two prominent lawyers have lauded the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission for correctly interpreting the law when it barred former Reserve Bank Governor Gideon Gono from filling the Buera Senate seat left vacant following the death of Kumbira Kangai. ZANU-PF had forwarded Gono's name as its choice to fill in the post, but ZEC disqualified him on the basis that he was not a registered voter in Manicaland. Prominent lawyer Terence Hussein, who also represents President Robert Mugabe in most cases, says ZEC chairperson Rita Makarau was spot on in coming up with that decision. Hussein tells Studio 7 the only logical move is for ZANU-PF to use its majority in parliament to change the constitution. He also says Gono can also take ZEC to court for to challenge the decision, a process he says may take long.
Judge Makarau seems to have the correct interpretation of the law. Remember, she's a very senior legal practitioner, an astute one, and a very senior judge, so she wouldn't get it wrong. So I think her position that she has communicated is the correct one.
But ZANU-PF, quoting Mr. Mutasa, Didmas Mutasa, also from the Herald, is being quoted as having said that if it means that the law would be amended to accommodate Mr. Gono, this is to be done. Is this possible?
Yes, it's always possible. If you are the ruling party and you've got a two-thirds majority in parliament, you can always amend the law to suit your needs or the needs of your programs as a party. So he is correct on that score.
But is there anything that Mr. Gono can do now before ZANU-PF amends the constitution?
Certainly not. There's a legal stalemate. The ZEC, who is responsible for doing the registrations, is saying we don't have the law and the power to do so, and we are not going to do so.
That was prominent lawyer Terence Hussein speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. But advocate Tawanda Juarara, who concurs with Hussein that ZEC acted reasonably, says even if ZANU-PF amends the constitution, Gono should have been on the party list for the 2013 elections to be eligible.
I think ZEC was extremely correct. It was actually in conformity with what the constitutional dictates as well as the statutory dictates. The Electoral Act is very clear at Section 45, subsection 1D. That the qualities of the individual that can represent an individual who was on a party list has to be a constituent member or registered in that particular constituency that he then intends to represent. So the electoral body, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, was actually correct at law. Their decision or their communication to ZANU-PF was actually correct and above board.
In the event that the constitution is amended, is Dr. Gono still eligible?
Unfortunately, in my opinion, I don't think so. What happens in the present electoral system is that you have to be on the party list. Dr. Gono was not on the ZANU-PF party list. Therefore, even if an amendment is made in the future, it cannot apply retrospectively. And it's something that they would, the legal experts really have to get into, whether or not any amendments would be then backdated to accommodate Dr. Gono's wish to be in parliament. If he was not on the party list or registered in that particular constituency.
That was Advocate Tawanda Juarara speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Renowned economic commentator and former Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe advisor Eric Block was laid to rest at Athlone Cemetery in Bulawayo today. Block was laid to rest next to his wife Bailey, who died in 2011. Attendees included politicians, diplomats, civil society activists, and economists, among others. In a graveside eulogy, former Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor Gideon Gono, who worked closely with Block at the central bank, said he was saddened by his passing. Bulawayo City Mayor Martin Moyo also paid his respects, saying Block was a patriot who contributed immensely to the city's development. Among those who saw Block off were German and Australian diplomats, Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda, Mabambo Kusile, Dawn leader Simba Makoni, economist John Robertson, and former Education Minister David Coulthard. Coming up,
the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe says two of the top cancers affecting people in the country are cancer of the cervix in women and prostate cancer in men.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
U.S. researchers say between 500,000 and 1.4 million people in West Africa could be infected with Ebola by January unless the epidemic is brought under control.
India has successfully placed a satellite into orbit around Mars, putting the nation into an elite club of deep space explorers that so far includes the United States, Russia, and Europe.
And former senior Chinese economic official has confessed to taking millions of dollars in bribes.
The Cancer Association of Zimbabwe says two of the top cancers affecting people in the country are cancer of the cervix in women and prostate cancer in men. Health Services Manager Patience Nyemba says the latest cancer studies conducted in 2011 locally show that there was a higher incidence of cancer in women than men. More than 53% of women are prone to cancer compared to 47% among men. Nyemba tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye men and women should periodically get checked for different cancers, as early detection will help in treatment plans.
Breast cancer is number two, but cervical cancer still remains number one. And cervical cancer is a cancer which is mainly caused by the human papilloma virus, a virus which is transmitted sexually, and that's the main cause of the cervical cancer. It's been found that in females, those statistics, about 53% of all cancers are female, and that about 30% of those cancers are mainly cervical cancer. And breast cancer is about 12%. And yet in the males, prostate cancer is about 12%, and then other cancers fall in place. Kaposi's sarcoma follows through the prostate cancer. And then it's also found that in females and males, another cancer which is coming up is the colon cancer. But those two main cancers I've mentioned, the prostate and the cervical, are the ones which are quite high.
That was Cancer Association of Zimbabwe Health Services Manager Patience Nyemba speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Harare.
Tomorrow we'll bring you an interview of a doctor who operated conjoined twins born recently in Mount Darwin, Mashonaland Central, who share most of their organs. The doctor says such births are common in the world.
It's not unique internationally to have sets of conjoined twins being sort of delivered and reported on all around the world. And, you know, in Zimbabwe as well, I had a set 10 years ago that was delivered at Howard Mission, but we sent them to the hospital for sick children in Toronto, Canada, and they were successfully separated, now back in Zimbabwe, growing up as normal boys.
Don't miss it tomorrow on Studio 7.
One of the country's biggest performing art festivals, Intuasa Arts Festivals, which runs for the next 4 days, kicked off yesterday in Bulawayo's large city hall. The annual event that started 10 years ago also features performing artists from other countries including Ghana, Kenya, Belgium and South Africa. Festival spokesman Kululeko Nkala tells Studio 7 this year's event that runs till Saturday is expected to be bigger as it also celebrates the city of Bulawayo's 120-year anniversary.
We are running 48 events at this year's festival. This is our 10th anniversary, so we wanted to make it big. And our main performance here will be by a group of artists from the called the Bulawayo Concert. Because our 10th anniversary coincides with Bulawayo turning 120, we pledge to have one big event that will sort of blow everyone's mind off, and that is one event. But we're expecting about 10,000 to 20,000 people to attend the festival throughout the 5 days here.
We understand there are some groups or individuals coming from outside Zimbabwe. Can you tell us how many you are expecting and what are their performances?
We've got a guy from South Africa that is performing a theater piece. It's a one-man play. He's doing it at the Blau Theater tomorrow. We also have poets from Denmark, Kenya, and Uganda.
That was Nkululeko Nkala, a spokesman for the Intuasa Festival of the Arts. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
The South African Home Affairs Minister is set to brief members of the media tomorrow on Pretoria's readiness for the implementation of the Zimbabwean Special Project, or ZSP. Home Affairs officials last week urged Zimbabweans to start filling work, business and student permit applications before October 1st in order to regularize their status in the country. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to Mabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, who explains that permit holders must apply for an extension of the expiring permits.
All permits, like we have always said, they have been extended. Those that have expired to the 31st of December 2014, those that were set to expire next year or the other year, they've been brought forward to 31 December 2014.
And then any Zimbabweans, of course, as you're saying, who want to apply for this new process or the extension must begin the permit process October 1.
The renewal of permits starts on the 1st of October 2014 to the 31st of December 2014. That is the online application where the applicant will then be required to fill in the form online, submit online their required documents, their letter of employment, their copy of the Zimbabwean valid passport and other related documents if you're applying for a study permit or a business permit. But then once you then apply, there's going to be a call center number where one will want to book an appointment. Appointments are for interviews. Appointments are open from the 1st of November 2014 to the 30th of April 2015.
Is there any indication what someone will do in regards to their stay while they're waiting for that interview?
Yes, you apply. They are going to reply you. They will give you a reference number to say you have applied. They will respond in an email where a person will have a proof of a permit application. That proof will be the reference number so that when one goes for an interview, one produces that reference number.
That was Ngabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, on the line with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbom. That's our broadcast this evening. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Chris Gandhi.